Hi, I'm Steph.
And I'm Jules.
And welcome to The Babesmen.
Steph is a body positive photographer.
And Jules is an intuitive eating and body image coach.
And we're passionate about empowering people to own their bodies and themselves so that they can live their biggest, boldest lives.
So join us as we celebrate the stories of incredible humans and the bodies they've lived them in. Ugh, that was bananas.
You may have just heard part of Steph saying that was bananas because that's what she was saying as she hit record. And I mean, we legit, like, we just hung up Zoom with Olga, our guest today. Olga Lacroix, if I said that correctly, I hope I did. And we were both just sitting here, like, dumbfounded, honestly, because it was just such a powerful and important conversation.
This was such a beautiful conversation with Olga today and truthfully, we were not expecting it to be the conversation that we had today, which number one is my favorite thing about our podcast.
I know.
It gets to be whatever it is.
It gets to be organic.
But talking to Olga about her journey was so phenomenal and just so inspiring.
We bring to you guys a conversation that we have yet to have on the podcast. Olga shares her journey of infertility, her journey of having miscarriages. She does now have a baby boy, Mateo. And she just, her story is one of incredible resilience. And she has just so much to share on this topic. And it maybe you're listening and you're like, well, I'm not even trying to have kids. I don't want... It's still, I think, just a really incredible conversation for like every woman because chances are you know someone who's going through it. And one of the questions that we ask later in the episode is like, how can we be there for friends or family who are going through this or have had a miscarriage, for instance? And I just think it's a really important conversation for all women to hear so that these really, really challenging things can be maybe a little less challenging. Like if we can make them 1% less challenging by being more open and vulnerable and supporting one another more, I just think like, wow, that's really important.
Yeah. And obviously a small content warning that if infertility and things like that do bring up some hard feelings for you, obviously be aware that we are talking about that in today's episode. But again, I would encourage you that if you do have the brain and heart space to take it in. It is a beautiful conversation about this topic and really a great way to feel in community through something that can be very difficult.
Absolutely. And one little technical note, there might be in the beginning some kind of freezes, but it gets really good as we go on. Like there were no issues for most of the episode. So if in the beginning you hear any sort of, and maybe there won't be when we hear it post-production, but just in case you hear a little bit of like freezing kind of happening,
just
pauses.
Bear with us
for the first like 5 or 5 minutes, I would say, because after that, it really does get back to normal. Yeah. So
guys,
enjoy the episode.
Here's Olga.
Hey guys, Julie here. Real quick, before we get into all of the goodness of today's episode, I had to let you guys know that my very special immersive 8-month long group coaching experience called Homecoming is officially open for enrollment. And actually, we only have a few spots left. If you have ever wanted to coach with me on a more in-depth level, if you ever wanted to access, for instance, one-on-one coaching, this is how you do it.
This is it.
You do it in Homecoming. Homecoming is really special because you not only get me as your coach in a very intimate setting, you also get our girl Holly Toronto.
We love Holly Toronto.
We love Holly. Yeah, so Holly and I created this program last year, and truly seeing the women that we had in our first Homecoming cohort go through the program has been the most empowering, inspiring thing. We love this program. I truly can say to you without a shadow of a doubt, it is our best offering. I'm doing now more of this and actually less one-on-one coaching because I see the power of the Homecoming framework of doing this, of this work of healing your relationship with food and your body. But really, Homecoming is about coming home to yourself, So we do the intuitive eating work, we do the body image work, but then we actually get to go deeper. We go that next level into what is living your absolute dream life look like for you. All of that is inside of Homecoming. It's a really phenomenal program. And so if you are interested in joining us, we only open the doors to this program once a year. So now is your time to join us inside this really powerful experience. Doors will not open again until February of 2022.
That's 100 years away.
Yes, yes. And so really this program is for you guys if you want to really partner with your bodies to unleash your limitless potential, all right? And embody your big, bold, beautiful life right now. The link is in our show notes to learn more about the Homecoming experience and to apply for a discovery session. You'll hop on the phone with me or Holly, whoever you want, and we'll chat more about you and your own unique experience and see if this program is the right fit for you. It is a small group. Spaces are limited, and you only have until March 1st to schedule that discovery session because the program begins on March 8th. So that is like right around the corner, you guys. So check out the show notes. If you are interested in Homecoming, I would love to meet you and get to support you on that very intimate level inside that program.
Do it.
And now, into the show. All right. We are here in the Babesmint. Maple has... Maple stole Steph's seat, y'all. She literally, Olga was like joining us on Zoom as we're like, oh God, we got to totally like rearrange our bodies because Maple was like, no, this is my spot.
I just feel like it's really unfair that I shifted for a second and she put her, she's not a small dog.
No, she weighs 100 pounds, y'all.
She's
big dog.
She is a large woman and she shifted herself right into my seat.
She literally did. Like Steph was sitting there.
And I was pushed away. and now I'm having to sit in a different location, which feels all wrong because this is... I know we say it all the time that it's Maple's podcast, but it is actually my podcast and your podcast.
Truly. And as we were like laughing about this with Olga, would you share the hilarious story that you just told us off mic? Because it's so funny.
Yeah. So I have a big space for my podcast. We can share a space with my dog. And I was coaching in the middle of a coaching session in a pivotal moment of silence. And my Rottweiler, also 100 pounds, lets go the longest, loudest fart. It was impossible to miss. I am pretty sure it went through my mic that picks up on every sound. And so I apologize. I'm like, I'm so sorry my dog is here. We moved on. He did it a second time. I was so embarrassed. I had to point the camera to Nico and be like, it was him. I swear to God. I did it for you guys, but my dog cannot.
That is
so funny.
So funny. That is one thing I feel very lucky with Maple is she never farts. Like never, because dog farts are the worst. Like
dog farts will take you out. Foul.
They linger. They are dense. They linger and stay. And you have to run for your life. Which was also why I was so upset about my dog. I'm like, I have to stay here. I'm coaching.
You have to just live in it.
That is so funny. I'm dead.
Oh man, that's so true. When you can't move and you're like, I can feel the smell is coming towards me and there's nowhere for me to go.
We've become one with the smell. And no, I do not like that. I do not appreciate it. So he's not allowed anymore. He's my quiet dog. He's the one that would never bark. And he goes and does that.
Doesn't like, bark, no. But farts. I mean,
farts.
Hilarious.
That is so funny. Well, with that, welcome to the Babesmint, Olga. We are so excited to have you. Why don't you just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners, who you are, where you're from, what you do?
All right. So, hi, everybody. I am very excited to be here. My name is Olga Lacroix, which I'll explain that later, but really, I married a French Canadian, so the accent you hear is Spanish. The last name, whatever, comes from my husband.
I love it. What a great last name.
I'm a mindset coach and I've been coaching women for over 16 years on all things related to the mind. I particularly love mindfulness. So all of my coaching kind of revolves around helping people become mindful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've run a couple of online coaching programs and memberships to help people with their mindset. I'm excited to be talking about body image and mindset.
We will try really hard to not like cut you off since our connection is like wonky today.
We are active listeners, Julia especially. So we really love to respond while you're talking. But this whole past year has been a very big lesson for us in not doing that with Zoom.
I know. It's challenging. But we are so excited to have you, Olga.
It's so hard. I know.
We're going to do our best with this recording. But we're pumped to have you here. And so today on the episode, guys, we're going to talk all about mindfulness and mindset and how we can really powerfully reprogram our minds, you know, and talk about the power of mindfulness. And so we're going to get into all of that. But of course, we're going to start the pod with our very first question. Steph, take it away.
My favorite question. So Olga, we always like to start our interviews with the same question, which is, can you tell us a little bit about what your relationship with your body was like when you were young?
Oh my God. This is like an amazing first question. Also one that I could talk to for hours. I'm going to tell you that I was completely unaware I had a body. I was like fully unaware I had a body until I was 10 years old and my body gave up on me. Oh, and so maybe my awareness to the body, like it's a little bit less traditional. I had appendicitis and I don't know if you guys know how painful that is. Mm-hmm. It's painful.
Oh God.
And it was misdiagnosed. It was misdiagnosed by 1, 2, 3 doctors. Long story short, I ended up almost dying.
Oh my God.
In a coma and fighting for my life to make it to my 11th birthday.
Wow.
So I can say that my relationship with my body started a little bit rocky, but to tell you the truth, I became incredibly, incredibly thankful to have a body at all and to understand. But this also is the most complicated relationship I've had with my body in my abdomen, from like the top of my ribcage all the way past below my belly button. And because my body was in such a critical state, I scarred very poorly. So it's not a pretty scar. My abdomen looks completely, I'm going to say abnormal, out of shape. Like my belly button's to the side. It kind of looks like I'm smiling. the abdomen is smiling. And so you can imagine that going into my teen years and early 20s, this was devastating. Mm. This was devastating for me. I could never wear crop tops, or I felt like I couldn't. I would never wear a bikini. Like, God, I would rather die than wear a two-piece bikini and show to the world my scar and my not pretty looking belly, which was such a hard thing to comprehend. Because on the one hand, I love that scar. They saved my life through it. It reminded me that I had given a second chance to be alive. But at the same time, I hated it. It made me so self-conscious and it made me, you know, like second guess everything I wore. If they could see it through the shirt I was wearing, if anybody's like grabbed my belly, God, you know, like I would hate it. Like even in my relationships, I would hate a boyfriend to maybe just like grab you, you know how they might grab you from behind and just like hold you from the belly. I would hate it. Yeah. Anything that could remind me of anybody like seeing this ugly, quote unquote, ugly part of my body. So it was very rocky. And I would say that I became a bit obsessive over looking great everywhere else.
Yeah.
To compensate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense, right? Like that makes so much sense. And it's, I mean, hearing your story just so far, I mean, I'm so taken aback, you know, by what you went through so young. I mean, 10 years old to have almost died from appendicitis. And I mean, wow, like that is absolutely a huge moment in your life. And of course, your relationship with your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my mindset, like my mind can then.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think, so I had cancer when I was 9.
Yeah.
And I feel like in a way I can relate to that because, you know, like I lost all of my hair because I went through chemotherapy, like all these things. I sort of felt like I, for the first time, became very aware that I looked like something because I looked different than the kids around me. And I think that was like a major catalyst for me of like feeling that sense of shame around my body, around myself, of what I looked like and feeling that like that outside feeling, you know, and not wanting to be noticed for that. So I feel like it can be really difficult when you have these like I have scars and like things like that where like I can look at that and be like, that saved my life now, you know, 21 years later. But when you're young and you just feel othered, it can be so difficult not to blame your body and not to really take that out on your body.
Yeah. And I love what you were saying, Olga, that there was like this part of you that was like, no, I'm so grateful for my scar. My scar shows, you know, my body's resilience and that I survived. I got through that. And what an incredible reminder, right, of like how strong your body is, but then how that was really overridden by, of course, our expectations from society to look this one certain way. And it's also, I mean, I'm sure many listeners, I think most women that I've talked to and have coached with, a lot of us have really fraught relationships with our bellies, period.
Yeah.
You know, but then to also have an experience like you had, you know, of course makes it all the more complex. And it just makes me so sad because it's our culture, you know, that so strategically trains us, you know, from such a young age, programs us to know, to deeply know that a falsity, right? That like, oh, I have to look this way. Like looking this way is what is the most important thing about my body and how I look and therefore about myself, right? And so it like that takes precedence because we learn from such a young age that like, oh my gosh, we better look this one way. Otherwise, we don't fit in. We're not as worthy. We're not beautiful. We're not enough. And so I hate that, right? Because
I'm like people.
Yeah.
Like I remember being a teenager and I developed like earlier than like, I don't know. I had like growing breasts and I had like a really feminine figure from that early, like maybe 12 on. And I remember people saying to me, like relatives, or, you know, nobody meant this in a bad way, but people will be like, oh my God, you have a perfect body. The only thing is your scar. So problem. I cannot fully love and accept my body because look, it's been damaged.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting comment, right? From friends and family. Oh, you have a perfect body, but your scar. Because it also, even though like the first part of that seems positive, like, oh, you have a perfect body, it still then reduces you to your body. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you better not lose it. You better not change. You know what I mean? So even the first part of that phrase, of that idea is still really harmful because perfect by whose standards, right? Yeah. They're measuring you up against these societal standards. And making that mean so much about you, right? But then, of course, when they add in except for your scar, like, oh, it's wrong to be human and have a body go through something and have a scar. Like, we now know, obviously, there's nothing wrong with a scar. Like, literally nothing wrong with a scar. That's a normal part of being a human, especially when you go through, you know, life and experience what you did, you know? And I hate that these little things are demonized and made us feel like we're wrong and in need of fixing and like the scar should be erased. It's just so harmful.
And I have to tell you that it took me the majority of my adult life to get over that and to be able to say the scar is actually something I'm proud of and walk in it. I only now mostly own 2-piece bikinis. And my body has changed so much. Like, I think back when I thought I wasn't supposed to be doing this, I'm like, wow, you know, like, And for me, it sadly took my pregnancy, which I fought for so much. Mm. And the look of a growing belly, which on its own was a miracle, and a scar that was like giving in with my skin. Mm. I couldn't avoid that there were two miracles at all times down there, my life and the life of my baby. Ooh. And that's when I started wearing two-piece bikinis and proudly show my scar. And my worst fear always, my entire life, was like, how is this scar going to look after my belly has stretched out to the max in a pregnancy? You know what? It looks the same as when it started. It all comes back to the way it was. And like my worst fear was so based on these fallacies that I had created. I mean, I can't just blame it on myself. I was only 10. Where will these perceptions come from? Right? Like our community for sure.
Yeah.
But I in retrospect, I wish I had the courage to love myself. And I mean, that's the gift my son gave me. It was unconditional love to my imperfect existence because he was perfect. But before that, you know, I wish in retrospect that I could have gone and be more aware of, I guess you taught me this, Julie, the diet culture, what it has done to me.
Yeah.
I
had the chills.
I mean, what a beautiful statement that you made of like looking down at these two lives being shown on your own belly, of your own life being saved and your son's life being created.
Full body chills.
Just
like, I was just like, holy shit.
And,
like,
and it's such an incredible that's such an incredible human moment, human experience of like, that's why our bodies are here, right? Yeah. Like they are tools for us to live our lives. And I read something recently that it's like, we get this idea that, you know, things like scars are imperfections, but like bodies are not perfect entities. Like there is no such thing as perfection in a body. Yeah. So there can be no such thing as an imperfection in your body.
Right.
It's all just what you are and who you are. And I just love the way that you said that. And especially, you know, knowing that you fought for your son and for that life, that miracle that you got to create. And so to be able to hold both truths in your hands at the same time.
Yeah.
Is really, really beautiful.
Absolutely. Let's talk more about what we're talking about. Like, Steph and I know a bit more about your journey, Olga, with your pregnancy. So let's invite the listeners into what we mean when we say that you fought, you know, for your son. Would you share that with our listeners?
I got gladly, because this all relates to the body. And now I feel that I am sort of looking in like from above to my life and being like, oh, look, it all connects and it all makes sense today. But in its moment, like the day that I took it, and there is a photograph in my fertility journey Instagram account of me looking at that growing belly and I proudly showing everyone like the two miracles and explaining to the world what it meant to me, that acceptance. But unconditional love has been the greatest gift that was brought to me by infertility. My husband and I were both diagnosed with unexplained infertility. That is as frustrating as the diet culture, my friends. There is no answers and you just want to fight it. You're like, why? Why isn't? So unexplained infertility, for those of you who are listening and don't know, because I didn't know what this was, everything works. Everything is good. Yet we're not able to conceive for some unexplained reason. And we tried everything possibly naturally for a couple of years. I, as well as being a mindset coach, I am a yoga teacher and a Reiki master, and I believe all things natural. So, you know, I did all the mindset. I did not all the mindset that happened later, but I did all what I thought I could do naturally with my mind, with my body, and no baby was coming our way. And we started doing treatments to which led to multiple losses, which broke my heart.
Oh my God.
And it's incredibly intrusive to your body to go through fertility treatments. I mean, from internal ultrasounds, ladies, which suck, and that become like your normal, to injections on your belly, on your butt, and just multiple people looking down your hoo-ha and thinking like, let me see what's happening, to then having to cope with the heartache of pregnancy loss and in our case, also multiple embryo losses even before they made it to my uterus.
Oh my gosh.
So my son comes from our fourth round of IVF where I had the least amount of eggs. I only actually had one follicle growing. And the doctor wanted to cancel that cycle. And I said, this could be my heart of gold. I want to move forward. And that's Mateo. He's 15 months old today. So he's definitely a miracle. The only one from all his siblings that made it to this side of earth. And it took me 5 years. I started at the age of 31 trying to conceive. And I gave birth to my baby boy at 36.
Oh.
36. So he's a miracle and my greatest accomplishment for sure.
If you could see me, I'm just like, I'm in tears listening to you. Just
and I
like
have chills.
I've had just people close to me, you know, go through like just bits of what you said. Like different people go through like different parts of it. And to imagine like going through all of what you did, like with the losses and with the multiple rounds of IV, I'm just like, oh my God, my whole heart. Like, wow, like you just have been through so much.
Yeah. People ask me, how did you do it one after the other? Yeah. My answer goes back to love is stronger than fear and pain.
Wow.
And it is the love for this unborn child. I didn't know him then, but I knew how special he was and how amazing it would be to meet him. Oh. And I always knew I was going to have a boy. Don't ask me why. I always talked about him.
Oh my gosh.
As if I had pre-selected him. He was like, going to be a boy. So when they told me it was a male embryo, I'm like, yeah, I knew it. I knew it all along.
You're of course.
I also just have the absolute chills that it was at that last one where the doctor was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't even do this round. And you were like, no, we need to. I'm just like, holy crap. Like, it's just so all of it. I'm just really moved by. It's just.
And that to me is the side of the body connection that we don't talk much about, that I tell my clients now. I coach women as well through fertility, infertility issues and pregnancy loss and pregnancy after loss, because I have to.
Yeah.
Like this whole thing didn't happen just so that I could go through it. I really feel that I'm called to coach people through this. And the thing that keeps coming back to me is my body told me all along I was going to be okay. And even throughout the pregnancy, you can imagine after having so many losses, it is nerve-wracking. I honestly feel, Chris and I both say that we didn't fully take an inhale until Mateo was in our arms after he was born. That's when we came back to our bodies. We're like, okay, he's here, he's safe. But my body throughout my entire pregnancy would tell me, like, whenever my mind would freak out, I'll ask the body, how's the baby? And then I'll have like this really calming sensation go through my body. And I knew, okay, no, the baby's good. Otherwise my body would be alarming me that something's up. And so that's the gift. Like, I think that so many doctor's appointments, so much having to come back to my, what I call home, like the inside of my soul, allow me to have a stronger connection to the body, which I realize everybody has that ability. We can all connect to the wisdom of our body, which always chooses what's best for us. It's always looking after us. It only makes sense. We love it back, right?
Absolutely.
The minimum we can do.
Yeah.
That's such a, it's something that we talk about, you know, like connection over control with our bodies a lot. And I know Julie and I have talked about this a lot, that like our bodies are so smart and like the body knows first. Mm-hmm. Like when we are feeling something or trying to make a decision, it's like our body is trying to clue us in to what our move is, like what feels right, what feels good, how we're doing. And it's such a, that's such a beautiful experience of that truth, that like your body, if you can listen to her and you can be connected with her, she can let you know and can really like give you that ability to understand, you know, when it is time to keep trying and when it's when and to know that you're safe and to know that your baby's safe and all of those sorts of things. I think that you know, I'm positive that some of our listeners have gone through or are currently going through similar struggles. And I think that your story is one that is going to hit home for so many people. And it's such a beautiful way to understand that, like, your body is you and is trying to, like, be there for you and help you. You just have to sort of, like, you have to trust her and you have to trust yourself.
100%. And I it's never let me down. Even when I thought my body was letting me down, it really wasn't. It was doing its job. Like, all the miscarriages later through our journey, we genetically test our embryos. And so we knew many of them were missing a chromosome. So my body was just not developing this pregnancy, you know? And so when you understand how incredible it is that the body knows. Mm. And you guys, like, if that doesn't blow your mind, after you give birth, your body knows what your baby needs and it produces the right amount of nutrients to pass through your breast to give to your baby. And it's all your baby needs. Yeah. That to me is incredible.
Yeah.
And when your baby goes into solids, your body knows. And so it produces less food. And it, like, it's so incredible. Like, your baby's saliva informs the body of what it needs to do.
That's so bananas.
It really is. And just, like, what I keep coming back to as I'm listening to you, Olga, and your story from childhood through your pregnancy stories, it's just like resilience, you know? It just, I keep coming back to resilience and to how resilient not only you are as a person, right? And we'll get into the mindset aspect of all of this, absolutely. But while we're right here, it's like the resilience too of your body, you know, and this intelligence of our bodies. And our bodies do so much for us and they go through so much for us. And it's like our bodies are always actually fighting for us, you know, like that's what I keep getting from your story. And for us to really take a step back and, like, wow, can we take a moment to really appreciate and respect our bodies for all that they do for us, even when some of it's really hard.
And I think that that's the connection to that unconditional source of love. That's what I keep saying my song gifted me with, because I learned to love throughout infertility. It's so easy, especially when you are already blinded by diet culture, to blame your body, to be disappointed with your body. And when it's in your heart as a woman to want to become a mom and it's not happening, the first thing we do is blame our body. Mm. Like, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you doing this? It is my woman birthright to conceive. How come you're not doing that? Mm. And that was definitely what happened to me. I was very mad at my body for a long time. Mm. And it wasn't until I surrendered and recognized that the only way out of this was through loving, like, that no transformation could really happen if I kept rejecting and sort of, like, bullying my body for being my body. It was doing something. It was doing what it needed to do that I didn't realize how powerful it was to just do exactly what, Julie, what you were saying, just aligning with that resiliency of the body and how amazing it is to even get to enjoy one. Wow. So that means we're alive, right? So,
yeah.
Hi, friends. It's me, your girl, Steph. Have you been thinking about doing a goddess session? You've heard us talk about
them. You probably have been thinking about it. Let's be real.
She's here too.
Hi.
You probably have been thinking about doing a goddess session, right? You've heard us talk about them on the podcast for a year now. You maybe follow me on Instagram. If you don't, you should. But if you have had that feeling in the back of your mind, like it's something you want to do for yourself, but you just feel like you need to wait. You need to wait until you hit X, Y, and Z. I'm here to tell you, stop waiting.
Stop waiting.
Stop waiting. The you that you are right this minute is a you worth celebrating, all right? And if you feel like you need to wait, you could be waiting forever, because honestly, how ready do you ever feel for something new in your life.
Mm-hmm.
New things just happen.
Never. You're never ready. You just gotta do it.
You're never ready. You just gotta jump right in. And so I'm here to tell you that if you've been waiting for a sign, this is it, baby.
This is your sign. This is your sign.
This is your sign.
I saw a sign. Opened up my eyes.
No, this is really good because you didn't sing during the whole rest of the pod.
You're right.
So it's good that you're singing now because otherwise it would be all wrong. Anyway, if you're waiting for a sign, go book a goddess session. Everybody's doing it. Go book it. Just book it now. Now's the time.
Perfect.
I would love to celebrate you with you.
Hell yeah.
All right. Link in the show notes. Link in my Instagram bio. On my website. Everywhere you want to find it. Come book your goddess session. Come hang. I can't wait to see you.
And now back to the app. It makes me mad when I think about this being one of the side effects of diet culture that I don't know is often talked about, but I hear it coming up here. I've had a few clients lately share similar things as well in terms of this idea that we are to blame when things like this happen, whether it's, you know, an infertility journey, whether it's a different sort of illness that somebody has. There's a lot of blame that we can place on ourselves,
yeah,
because there are so many messages out there from diet culture that's like, oh, well, you should be eating X, Y, and Z and working out in this way and doing this. And if you're not, then like if you get sick, it's your fault. And
yeah,
that is really, really, really damaging.
It's super harmful. I think it comes back to looking at the, you know, we talk about this idea of the ideal body, quote unquote, in terms of visually what it looks like. But there's another layer, which is mm-hmm. how it behaves and what it does, yeah, which is that we feel like the ideal body functions, quote unquote, perfectly.
Healthism.
And healthism.
Yeah.
It's that we, when something is not functioning as we deem to be normal, we take that out on ourselves as a failure. And that is, again, another like layer of diet culture, because the reality is that all bodies function so differently.
Yeah.
And we know that.
Yeah.
But we do. And I think especially with something like with, you know, women and fertility is something that we take on so personally because it's ingrained from you from day one that like this is what being a woman is.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it can be, number one, it can be a source of shame when you choose that motherhood is not for you. But it can also be a source of shame when your body is not easily able to conceive, which I have found, you know, in my adult years, as my friends and people that I know have started trying to have children, is that it's actually much more difficult to conceive and to have a child than we have been let on to believe through the failures of sex education. But I just think it's so important to have these conversations and to let people in, similarly to how it's important to let people into the understanding that like when you are struggling with your body image, you're not alone in that. It is so many of us, and in fact, most of us. I think that mm-hmm. things like, you know, infertility and struggling to begin your family or have children is also so common,
yeah,
and is not something that we should feel a sense of shame about and should actually be able to be open about, especially because community is what saves us, you know?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like what I found throughout, so my journey was 5 years and I honestly was in the closet infertility woman for 2 of those years because I was covered in shame,
oh, wow,
of sharing this. And my shame sounded like, oh, I just don't want people to feel pity for me. Mm. But truly, I just didn't like being inadequate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which is the feeling of most like women going through infertility, is that how come I'm not doing what everybody else is supposed to be able to do? Like,
yeah,
somehow I am inadequate. And I borrow that concept from Michelle Obama, who in her book Becoming, her daughters were conceived through IVF. And mm-hmm. she expressed feeling like those were the words. And I'm like, oh my God, you gave me the word I was looking for. Like, why do I feel like I should be able to do this, but I'm not doing it? Right. I would apologize to my husband. Oh, and he'll be like, what is wrong with you?
Oh my gosh.
First of all, this is happening to both of us. And I tell you what, all of the treatment, whether you have male fertility issues or female fertility issues, the treatments happen to you, the woman. Yeah. And, you know, because you are going to be hosting the baby. And so I found very frustrating throughout my journey that the focus was on me.
Yeah.
By like medical field, but also everyone else. Like, so what are you doing? And what are you eating? And, you know, like the entire focus was like, you as a woman should be able to fix this.
Yeah.
And I became an advocate of sharing, like, this is happening to us. The couple is nobody's fault. And if I gotta change the way I eat, so does he. He's got 50% of this child. So, you know, like this blame on the woman has to stop, and it stops like, for me, at least started then.
Yeah.
Because it just makes no sense to have so much of that reinforcement of somehow. Same with a miscarriage. The first question people ask is like, oh, what did you do?
What? Are you serious?
Wow.
That's the question people ask?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, maybe I walk too much. Like, why are you blaming me? I'm already going to that place. As a mom who just lost a baby, you immediately start going over every single thing you've done. You don't need anybody else to be like, oh, maybe you walk too much. Do you think if you hadn't gone to spinning class, that would have been
Oh my gosh.
It sucks.
That's really horrible. I didn't read the article, but I saw that one of the Peloton instructors, Robin Arzon, she's currently pregnant, and she went through an IVF journey, and she, you know, she's lead of fitness at Peloton. Obviously, she's been in fitness for like for a long time now. And, you know, I'm not an expert in this, but I know that like when you are already like you have a fitness routine, like you're oftentimes able to keep that, right? As you're pregnant. And she's gotten a lot of people, I guess, like in her DMs or whatever, that have been like, you shouldn't be doing this. And it's like people, you know, putting their own kind of judgments onto her. And so there's in so many ways we can see how there is just so much put on women, you know, like in so many aspects, right? Of like what we should and shouldn't do and how we should be in our bodies, and is A, B, and C our fault? And it's just really destructive.
It is. And in some way, I thought about this while I was going through this. It's partially our fault because we don't say anything. We don't try and educate differently. We don't become advocates. We don't say, this hurts. Stop asking me that.
Mm.
Which I became unapologetic about.
Yeah.
Like, if you have the balls to ask me something so personal as to when am I going to have babies, I'm going to tell you, oh, I'm actually miscarrying as we speak, if that's the case. And you deal with what you feel after asking me that, and you were not ready for a real answer.
Yeah.
And so
one
of the things that I became very advocate is to educate the community, and to just like, I didn't know, I would have asked questions. I would have said things not thinking they're inappropriate or insensitive, not having gone through it, not knowing the extent of what can trigger a woman or what can make a woman feel, you know, more at fault or blameful or like, I also believed we should stay quiet the first 3 months and tell anybody that you're pregnant, just in case you lose the baby. So you're all alone suffering by yourself. Mm. You know, like I was that woman. And then I realized this sucks. Steph, you said it, community builds you up.
Yeah.
And so I stand against this secrecy of pregnancy. Like, hold on, let me just make sure that I'm going to make it through and then I'll tell you. No, I want to be supported from day one.
Wow.
And this is a choice I make. But you know who fights me on this mostly? Women. Because they've been so brainwashed that you only share when you know you're successful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, and something that you said that really stuck out to me is actually answering the people who are asking you what is an invasive question. Honestly, because I think that's something that we, especially as women, do very often, is that somebody will ask us a question that we find inappropriate or invasive or whatever. And instead of like giving them the truth to acknowledge the discomfort that they are placing on us, we sort of just sweep it away. And yep. and we take that pressure and that work onto ourselves of like appeasing the other person who is actually making us feel uncomfortable instead of giving them the truth, which may not be what they want to hear, but would help them understand that like, hey, maybe that's not a question to ask someone who is going through a difficult time. Yeah. And like you said, too, I know, you know, when one of my very best friends was pregnant with one of her children, she told me very early because I was at her house and she was like, well, I know I'm not supposed to tell you yet.
Yeah.
And then she was like, but then I realized you're my best friend and I would tell you if something happened anyway, because I would need you. And I'm like, exactly. Yeah. It's such a weird, like, again, a rule, an arbitrary rule that we've placed on ourselves as women is that we can't tell when we're, you know, pregnant or going through a change or whatever until we're like, quote unquote, sure that it's permanent. When in actuality, like, if you are
permanent.
And it's like you can never be 100% sure of the outcome of anything. And if something does happen and you do suffer a loss, like you need that community, you need your people. And so to feel like we have to just take that entire burden onto ourselves is just making our pain even greater. And I think doing ourselves and our communities a disservice.
Yep, 100%. And I, like I said, in my experience, this is led mostly by women. We're the ones who tell our friend, oh, so early to tell. Why are you telling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We kind of continue prolonging this cast that was put upon us. I don't know, back in the days when it was shameful to not procreate in your marriage. That was the whole purpose of a wife, was to bring into the world a baby. And if she didn't, this was extremely shameful and we should keep it hush-hush.
Yeah.
Like, I think that we need to become aware of our history and how much we've evolved and how we can rely on our supports, even though we can guarantee success. Because, I mean, I support women through stillbirth. You go all the way to almost 40 weeks and your baby dies at birth.
Yeah.
That happens. And then what? You should have kept your pregnancy asylums all along. Right. To go through the darkest time of your life all by yourself.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Absolutely. My world is kind of like rocked right now because I like...
Hi, Julie.
seriously, I'm like, oh my gosh. And now I respect any woman who like wants to keep, you know, things private for her. Like,
totally.
I respect that. I respect everyone's right to privacy, to tell whoever they want, whenever they want, all that stuff. But I think what you're saying here, Olga, is so like worldview shifting for me almost. It's like, yeah, because the reason why we don't tell people until 3 months, right? It is because if something happens, God forbid people know. And on one hand, I can see maybe you don't want everyone, and maybe it's hard for everyone to know, like people that you don't care about, for instance.
Yeah.
But like, wow, like you're right. Like we need that support. Like we shouldn't have to go through that alone. Like we should be able to lean on our friends if that happens. That shouldn't be a shameful thing. It should be something that we get support with and loved on for. You know what I mean? And like just having those people in our lives who are there for us. And it's makes me like almost mad to think that I wonder if part of it, I've never been pregnant, you know, but I wonder if part of it too, and part of that narrative is like this idea that we shouldn't burden people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I shouldn't burden my friends with this. It's like, no, what? We a good friend should want to be there with you and you know, help you through it. And so my world is kind of like rocked right now. It's like, wow, we're told to like wait so that what? If something happens, we have to go through it alone?
Yeah, so that we can carry it alone.
Without anybody?
And
like,
safely, and then you're like, it must have been my fault. You know, your mind goes to dark places.
We've
been a woman our entire lives. We know we can go to dark places
dramatically
just with our own little minds. So leave this to being hormonal to hide like an incredible pain. It doesn't matter how far along you're in your pregnancy. The day you know you're pregnant, you already visualize this kid getting married. You know, like you're just like, oh my God, I'm going to be a mom. And so that loss is a huge grief. And we wouldn't hide. We wouldn't hide the death of somebody we love ever, right? Because I may as well just do this on my own. We want the community. Gather in the community. We expect flowers and chocolates and calls and to be able to cry in front of everyone. So why is it that we minimize it to when it's a pregnancy loss or the potential? Even if you are a very private human, I would encourage you to really evaluate whether or not that comes from a place of wanting to be private or a shame that has been passed on to you and you don't even know that this is something that, you know, you're imperfect, inadequate if you lose this baby. So the less people that know you made a mistake, right? Like you had a boo-boo over here, the better.
Yeah. I hate that it's even thought of as a mistake, you know? I hate that it would even be thought as anything shameful, you know? Like it's not either of those things, you know? If anything, it's a tragic loss, right? Like, I wonder, Olga, like what would you say to somebody? Like let's imagine a listener has gone through a miscarriage or has gone through infertility troubles. Like what would you say to her? Like what would you want her to know?
That you're stronger than you give yourself credit, for one. And honestly, my healing process, sincerely, that resiliency, Julie, that you spoke about, started the day I decided to tell everyone that I was in pain. That my heart desire with an entire like force to be a mom, and that I couldn't, that it wasn't easy, and that created a crazy amount of grief, ongoing grief. Every single period is like the death of somebody you love, is grief. Yeah. And we minimize that. So please don't minimize it. And through coaching other women, so I know this isn't unique to me, the moment they have the courage to tell others, they tell me, Olga, you're right. Life is so much easier when I have to constantly worry about whether or not they're going to say something insensitive, what they know, what they're going to ask me, what I can't show them. I'm super hormonal right now. Like I was another human under hormones. Like I was another human. And it was so refreshing to be able to still be me because my community knew. Mm-hmm. And so the part that was incredibly healing, and I still have goosebumps when I think about it, you guys have no idea the amount of messages Chris and I have received the days leading up to the transferring of Mateo when he was an embryo into my uterus. People from all over the world, people who knew me and people who didn't, with prayers, best wishes, energy sinking, just that this baby will come through, because I feel that I mobilized energy. And so I've said from day one, Mateo is our baby, like everybody's baby. Aww. We all brought him into this life because the community rallied up with my feelings and they just sent me their best. So it wasn't pity. It wasn't worry. Pointing that finger, everybody knew what my heart was going through and everybody wanted with me, with Chris and I, that this baby will come through. Oh. And I don't even have words to describe what that has done to my heart and to my experience. Like to the point that I thought, even if this doesn't work, holy shit, everybody loves me. This is amazing. Strangers can relate to this story. Yeah. And that's something that you don't have access to if you keep this quiet to yourself. Yeah. So you're depriving yourself from healing and from actually help. Like people thinking and sending you best wish. I don't pray, but I love getting all these messages of people saying they were praying for me. I'm like, that must be good. That has to be something.
Well, yeah, that's such a, I have chills hearing you talk about that, because I do think that like positive energy helps create positive outcomes, and like, and getting to have like people, like you said, all over the world, people you know, people you don't know, who are just putting positivity towards you, towards what you are trying to accomplish and create for your own life. What a beautiful thing. Like, that's why, you know, I say like community is everything and is healing. Like that's how we do these things. And so that's why I think it's so important, you know, when it feels like what's right for you, like questioning these norms that we have accepted as truths and asking yourself, is this really what feels right to me? Or is my experience one that I want that community, I want that support, and that's going to feel good to me? Like really,
and also, how is it working, right? Yeah. How is it working for me to keep this a secret?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's working for me as it's happening. Like, because we're so convinced this is the right way.
Yeah.
But then just observe, is this working? Do you feel empowered? Do you feel like you have supports around you? Mm. But if you're losing your mind because you feel the baby move, like, do you have people to go talk to? And, you know, like it's okay to be, I question everything myself. So I feel that this was right up my alley, but it took me 2 years to get to that place where I no longer felt like having two lives, the life of me who was struggling with infertility and the face that I was putting to the world, like, oh, we're all good. Life is great. We keep buying dogs. Nobody knows why. You know, yeah. I bought 3 dogs. 2 of those were complete emotional purchases. Because I wanted a baby, but I couldn't. It all came together.
That's definitely how I would handle it too. I would just keep buying more dogs.
I would too.
It would definitely be my move.
I would love also, Olga, for you to let us know, because I had someone close to me who recently went through a miscarriage, and it was the first, like, yeah. And I would love to know, like, because I know I was in my head of like, okay, what do I say? How do I support her? Like, you know, there, with it being such a hush-hush thing, it's like, I feel like a lot of us don't know. How do we best support our friends? Like, how, it, and of course, everyone's different. So, obviously, everyone's going to need different things. But in general, having gone through it, what would you say to our listeners in terms of, like, if our friends go through it, how can we be, like, the best friend for them? How can we, like, really support them? What did you find really helpful?
You know that when you said everybody's going to experience this differently, especially because when there is a miscarriage, there is a surplus of hormones going through your body. And we know that that is going to impact us uniquely, right? Like what hormones will do to my body might be different than yours. But what I appreciate the most is transparency. So for you, if your friend is going through a miscarriage, feel the discomfort yourself of what that means like to you and how you are at a loss of words, or maybe you do have things to say, and express that. Like, even though I've gone through this, when a friend of mine lost her baby, I had to call her and say, like, I honestly have no idea what to tell you. My heart is broken. And so at least she was getting an honest, transparent Olga on the other side, which I think is what a woman in grief needs, is to know that you know what's happening to your friends. What ends up happening, because we are in discomfort about our friend's pain, we end up not doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. Not talking, not calling, because we're like, ooh, I don't know what to say, so I'd rather say nothing. And the woman who's in grief thinks, shit, nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. Like, she hasn't even brought up the fact that I had a miscarriage. We're like, you know, we're kind of waiting for people to bring it up. We're not always good at saying, this is what I need from you.
Yeah.
So since you're not under the hormones, since you are a human, seeing another human suffering, get past your discomfort, maybe even express it to that person, and then ask, what do you need from me?
Yeah.
How can I best support you?
Yeah.
Whatever I tell you, I don't know that in that moment, that's what I need, right? Like I would need to be in there and then know exactly. Like my husband got super, super good at asking, is there anything I can do to make it better for you right now? What can I do?
Yeah.
Which always brought me back to like, oh yeah, what do I need? Let me think about this for a moment.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't always know what I needed, but that question I really always appreciated. And then seeing people being real on the other side. Not just like telling me, it's going to be okay. I hate it when people be like, it's going to be okay. You're going to have another pregnancy.
Oh,
fuck off. Like, I'm going through this pain right now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody really close to me after our second failed IVF was like, you can always adopt. You think you needed to say this to me? I know that. But this is like, I'm grieving that this one loss right now. Let me process that. And again, I know it comes from a good place. We all hate seeing people we love being in pain. So we're trying to bring them up to a better tomorrow. Like, yeah, what about this? And I mean, this is when I apply mindfulness. Just let me have my feelings. Mm. Can you hold space for me?
It's one of those things that I know for me, like, people always want to get into fixing mode when you have a problem. And so they want to offer you some other solution. But when you are in grief or when you are in pain, like, you have to feel what you feel when you feel it. And I say this all the time, but it's something I learned. I don't remember who I read it from, but, you know, like, the best thing that I've learned to be able to offer comfort to somebody when I don't know what to say is to say, I don't know what to say. This should not have happened to you. This is not, like, this should not have happened to you. And I'm so sorry. And, like, just, can I just be here? Because truthfully, like, I know when I'm in pain, I just want somebody to be there with me. And I can't imagine what the loss is of having a miscarriage. I haven't lived that experience, but I know friends and people I love who have. And you just, I would just imagine you just want somebody to be there with you, to just hold your hand while you feel what you feel. And not, you know, try to offer you another solution, because you don't need a solution when you need to just feel your experience.
Yeah, my mantra was always, the only way out is through. Mm-hmm. And so most times all you need is somebody to go through mm-hmm. with you, right? Like, yeah. You stand here in silence. And in all honesty, it brings back the responsibility to the person in pain to really acknowledge and verbalize what they need, because often we're in pain and that's all we know. I'm in pain and I would love to not be in pain, but nobody can take that pain away. And so it brings actually your mind to a good place to start thinking, what do I need from my support? It brings you back to a really good, healthy mindset where you begin to think, okay, yeah, I definitely have to get out of here. But while I do, what is the most helpful thing that people around me can do for me? And like, I taught my husband to ask this, and it was always back to me where I would have to be in silence for a moment. Hold on. I don't know what I need. And sometimes the answer would be like, an ice cream. Thank you. That's what I need from you.
Yeah.
Other times it was like, I need you to leave the house and leave me alone. I honestly want to cry and be in a pity party for as long as I can. And so let me be. I don't need a fixer. My husband is definitely one of these humans who cannot stand seeing me brokenhearted. And so he would do anything in his power to just change my mood.
Yeah.
And sometimes I appreciate that. Right. And other times I honestly need to be sad with my emotions. So.
Yeah.
I love that question, or that mantra, the only way out is through, because then it really helps you go, right, like, okay, what does getting through mean? What do I need to focus on right now? What do I need right now just to get through this? Instead of like trying to just like distract and, you know, kind of try to fix it, right? It's like, okay, I'm in this right now. What do I need to do right now just to like get through this and be present for it? So that's powerful. And so I would love now to kind of switch gears a little bit to talk about like mindfulness, you know, and even how it related to this journey and why it's been so powerful and how it's been so powerful for you.
I love it. So you guys, I can talk about this for years. So you have to keep me in track here. So just a brief explanation on mindfulness. Since I became a social worker, that's my clinical training in social work. Because of my health experiences with my body, I always believed in a holistic approach to health in general. And so the moment I was working as a clinician, I didn't just want to know what was in my textbooks. I was like always looking for, there's got to be more that we can teach people. And I became aware of mindfulness. I was maybe 23 years old at the time, and took all my trainings, became primarily a practitioner of mindfulness. And I can tell you, mindfulness saved me through the fertility journey. I would have suffered a lot more without it. And there are many teachings of mindfulness, but there is like seven main teachings. And one of those showed up as a mentor for me throughout this infertility. And that was acceptance. Mm-hmm. Because if there is something that you want to do when what you don't want happening is happening, it's a lack of acceptance. Yeah. You fight it.
Yeah.
And you fight it with everything you've got. And I've realized that much. So infertility is hands down the hardest thing I've done. Like just trying to get to my baby boy has been, and I've been through hardships in my life, but that has been so challenging because it is body and mind. It impacts your mind so much and your emotions. And I've realized halfway through my journey that I wasn't accepting, that I was not accepting that my body was not conceiving naturally. I was fighting that. And I talk about being inadequate. Well, what happens when you feel inadequate is you try to become adequate. And so rather than accepting and going with the flow and trusting that your body knows what's happening and that life knows what's ahead for you and that it's all going to be good, you fight it and you try to control it and you become a control freak. And I became a control freak. I nearly damaged my marriage and probably my health in that process of just wanting things to be perfect and control and control. And I stood away so much from accepting what was happening. Mm. So acceptance was a mentor that showed up for me throughout this journey to teach me that accepting doesn't mean I like it. Right? Like, yeah. I think that I was fighting accepting it because I didn't like that I wasn't a mom or that it was taking me so long to become one.
Right.
But when I've realized that acceptance simply meant I'm observing what's happening and I'm one with it as opposed to fighting it, holy shit, my life changed entirely when I started applying acceptance from that perspective. Okay, I don't like it, but can I accept even that I don't like it and be okay with that?
Yeah.
Can I accept that my body is doing one thing instead of wanting it to do something else? Mm-hmm. Can I accept that I am enough? Mm-hmm. So mindfulness came to save the day for me hugely because it showed me a new path to working towards a goal without striving for perfection, without feeling I wasn't enough. And it helped me shift my mindset to understand that the only thing that I really needed to let go of was the story that said that motherhood wasn't accessible to me.
Mm, wow.
Wow.
All along, that's what I was fighting, right? I was thinking, oh, this is not happening. So that's what I kept repeating in my head. This isn't happening. This isn't happening. Yeah. You're not going to be a mom. Yeah. When's it going to be your turn? You know, I had a whole lot of terrible mindsets and stories in my head preventing me from just allowing what's already inside of me to just surge, which was like, I was already a mom. I wanted to be a mom. It was born in my heart for a good reason. Yeah. So I realized I needed to start practicing more of what I was teaching.
That
was very humbling.
That is so powerful. Because, I mean, it's true. And I mean, this could be a whole nother episode.
we
could do a whole nother. Well, they have to have you back on, Olga. We have a whole nother episode because the stories that we tell in our minds are one of the most powerful forces in our lives, if not like the most powerful force in our lives, right?
Yeah.
Because it's what we are telling ourselves that our subconscious then takes as truth and thus manifests into our lives. And so when we're able to shift the stories, rewrite the stories, that's how we get to really shift our reality. And I'm not saying that's easy work, but that it's possible for us to do as you are so beautifully and powerfully describing to us right now.
Yeah. And I think that whether you're going through infertility or not, whatever mental challenges you're experiencing, accepting or coming from a place of understanding yourself with a lot more compassion and accepting what is without like this desire to change who you are, how you are, how things are. Just like there is no good or bad, there just is, and this is a part of my story, brings a sense of confidence and trust that I know you're seeking, you're after that. You know, we all want to have confidence. In infertility, the biggest thing that I hear, and I mean, I experience this not just from listening to my clients talk to me, but myself, nobody can tell the future, right? So if I had known, like, actually I was 9 months pregnant and I was asked to speak at a national conference here in Ottawa for infertility. And I was speaking in front of like hundreds of doctors and nurses. I was 6 months, like, sorry, 9 months pregnant. Like, I was due anytime and I still agreed to go. So I was like, I'm doing this. Like, this is my chance to go, you know? And I remember telling them, I said, if anybody had told me, listen, in 5 years from now, you're going to be 9 months pregnant, giving a conference about infertility, I would be like, what? You said I was going to be pregnant? I'm going to be pregnant? If somebody had told me this is coming, just coast, you know, go with life. How much easier would have been those 5 years?
Yeah.
That's just the level of trust we have to choose to have. And absolutely. I think that's what changed for me, is that I chose to believe hope. Hope was like my best friend, and I am going to visualize, you know, me holding a baby, me growing my family, all the things that allow me to believe that all I need to do is just trust. Mm-hmm. Sit here, trust, obviously do all the things that I need to do. I didn't think that a bird was going to bring me my baby to the door, right? Like, I knew I had to do some steps to get to that baby. But doing it with that trust that I was always in the right place. Mm. And that, that I was going to be in this blissful moment one day. And I tell you, holding my baby for the first time, looking down at him, and just thinking how much of a better mom he got because of all those 5 years of self-work, it was worth the wait.
Wow. Wow. Olga, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing yourself and with us just so openly and vulnerably. I mean, multiple times throughout this conversation, I've had full body chills.
Same.
I've had tears streaming down. This is not a conversation that we've had yet on the podcast. And I feel really, really grateful that we were able to have this conversation with you. I just know so deeply that many listeners are going to really get so much out of this, because we know that these are not issues that only a few women face. We know that these are actually very, very common. And so here's hoping that it becomes more common to talk about it so that we can all get the support that we need when we're going through things like this. And it's just also, I think I want to say before we really wrap up, is really this idea that our bodies aren't broken, our bodies aren't wrong, you know, this idea that like a scar shouldn't be there even is just not true, you know, and to challenge whenever we hear a message that tells us that our bodies are wrong, or they're supposed to act a certain way, they're supposed to look a certain way, they're supposed to, let's just challenge that, you know, okay, who says who? And who is profiting off of me thinking that my body is wrong and in need of fixing? You know, I just think that's a really important thing for all of us. You know, I mean, scars aren't wrong. It's not wrong. As Steph was saying earlier too, it's like our bodies aren't meant to just like stand on a pedestal and be seen. Like, our bodies aren't statues. Our bodies are meant for us to be out in the world and living and going through shit, you know? And if we have evidence of that through scars or stretch marks or wrinkles or blemishes or whatever it is, like, that's what an honor and a privilege to have a sign of life on us.
Yeah.
And and saying that actually now brings me back full circle to what you were saying when you looked down on your belly and you saw not only one sign of life, that was your wonderful baby boy, but also that scar that reminded you of the life that you were given, right? When you survived that appendicitis when you were, you know, 10, 11 years old. So much. There's so much in this episode, and we could keep going and going and going. And I'm serious. Like,
we're going to need to have you back on. We're not done with you yet.
We are not. You have so much to offer. And I'm just really grateful. Okay. We're going to get into like where people can find you, how they can learn more about mindfulness. But before we do, Steph, our final question.
Yes. Our last question, Olga. So just like we start the pod with the same question, we also end with the same one. And that is, if you could talk to younger Olga at any point in your life, you know, when she was 10 and getting that scar for the first time, or at any point through your journey, what is something that you wish that she knew?
Whoa, that's deep.
Yeah.
I know we throw it out like it's so easy to answer, but...
I think I would primarily just give her a hug and tell her that who she is exactly who she needs to be. And I think that young Olga knew she was strong. Like, people kept telling me, you've made it for a reason. You have like this, you know, massive mission in life. And I believed it. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm going to be amazing. But deep inside, I was lacking some self-love. So I think that I would just embrace her on like a heart-to-heart hug more than words. I would just say, I've got your back, girl. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I love that so
Everyone,
much.
Let's just like give ourselves a hug right now.
Especially in this time, we've not gotten enough hugs.
I know.
Exactly.
Listeners, we're literally all three hugging ourselves.
We're all three giving ourselves self-hugs.
It felt really good. So do it. A listener is hug yourself
right
now.
Please hug yourself right now, unless you're driving. Then, like,
then probably don't.
Maybe take a pause, but do it later for sure.
Do it at the next red light. Maybe. Even that might be dangerous. Never mind. I didn't tell you to do that.
When you put your car in park, go ahead and give yourself a hug.
And give yourself a hug then. Okay, so where can people find you to learn more about your amazing coaching and the mindfulness that you do in your memberships and all that good stuff?
So I think the best way is to direct you guys to my website, www.olgasway.com. You can also find me on Instagram at olgas.way, or if you're interested specifically in fertility, you can follow my page, Fertility Seeker. Fertility.seeker. I will send all of this for you to have.
We'll put it all in our show notes.
If you are really struggling with infertility specifically, I just want to tell you that I personally answer to every single message I get. Do not shy away from reaching out to me. If you need somebody in your corner, I'm your girl, and I'm happy to just accompany you through that journey, because I know firsthand how lonely it can be. So,
thank you,
Olga.
Thank you, Olga.
You are so incredible. Thank you so much for sharing your story and all of your wisdom with us today. This was such a beautiful conversation, and I'm so excited to get to share it with our listeners.
Same. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate the opportunity from the bottom of my heart, and I truly hope that those listening get the best out of this. So,
Yes.
I know they will. Hosting. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. All right, y'all. Thanks for joining us on another episode of The Babes Mint. We love you. Bye. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of The Babes Mint.
We hope you're feeling a little more at home in your body and inspired as hell.
If you are ready to change your relationship with your body and yourself, we're here for you.
Snag a goddess session with Steph.
Or check out Jules' free masterclass to free yourself from diet culture for good.
The links are on our website to learn more and sign up.
And of course, if you loved this episode, we'd so appreciate it if you spread the love a little bit.
Share the app.
Rate the show.
Leave a review.
Subscribe.
You know what to do. Until next time.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.